Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors, and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of Fires of the Dead, and I'm joined by my co-host, starting with Michael R. Fletcher.
The Fires of the Dead? Am I just never listening when you talk, or have you not mentioned this book before?
I've mentioned this book like 20
times. It's right there on a shelf.
It's literally right here.
I feel busted. Hi, I'm Michael R. Fletcher. I am incapable of paying attention to things.
Nice. Rob J. Hayes.
Hello, I am Rob J. Hayes, author of... I don't know, is it?
And Dirk Ashton.
I am Dirk Ashton, also author of The Razor's Edge and the Paternus Trilogy.
Nice.
I'm liking this up the nostrils angle. This is sweet.
Dirk has a new camera set up in his fancy room. It's quite intimidating. I feel like I'm in a much less powerful position.
Oh, when he's grinning like that with the camera, he looks like a big baby.
Oh. Okay, now I feel an equal level of power. Today's episode, we're trying a new format. It's going to be called, tentatively titled, Project In Depth, and we're going to talk about Siege of Trebolin, which is the
just made that interactive... up too. Just pulled that right out of his butt.
First we've heard about any of this.
That's the benefit of being a writer.
I mean, we're so professional. We just turned up and Jed's like, we're going to talk about this shit today. We're like, ah. Yeah.
You bastards. I do have to say, props to you guys for how good your points are, considering that you have like 3 seconds of preparation time before I start asking you to be like, okay guys, we're going to talk about the meaning of life. Mike, begin. And then Mike just rambles.
Well, that's what we did. That was the Steve episode.
That was literally the Chaos episode. Oh yeah, maybe we'll call it the Steve episode. That's kind of a cool
idea. Achieve the Steve.
Achieve the Steve. If you can visualize the Steve, you can be the Steve. Yes, so today's episode, Project In Depth, going to be talking about Siege of Trebolin, which is the interactive epic fantasy novel that I've been writing for the last 2 years and should be out as of the time of this episode, comes out April 14th, 2022, just in case you're listening to this in the future. Yeah, so do you guys just want to start? I'll give a brief overview to the audience and then you guys can just start grilling me with random questions. And more than happy to talk about things like advances or how the contract stuff works.
Well, tell us about the project in general. That's the most interesting thing.
So, Siege of Trebolin is an interactive novel, so like a text adventure where you are the ruler of a magical city that is under attack and you have to defend it from this enemy army that's trying to conquer your nation, while also managing all the fractious internal politics and conspiracies that are going on within your city. So the way to kind of think about it is it's like a novel, but at the end of every scene, you get to make a choice, and that choice affects what happens next and affects the kind of attributes of your character, which in turn alters how other characters see you and affects the world as you progress through the game. So all up, it's like a 280,000 word interactive novel. So it's like the longest book that I've ever written. And yeah, that's pretty much the project in a nutshell. I'll put a link to it down below as well. So yeah, fire away with the questions.
I mean, just the mechanics of putting it together sounds incredibly daunting. How often does the story split? Like, how often do you have to, stop? And then how many choices are there? And then how does it proceed to there? Does it automatically jump to the next, to that thread, that particular thread? And how often do you do that?
Yeah, so there's two sort of different types of choices when you're creating the game. There's a branching choice, which depending on which option you pick. So let's say option one is like, investigate behind the curtain in Dirk's office. Option two is punch Dirk. And then option three is run for your life.
Everybody's going to pick choice. Punch Dirk.
Everyone will pick punch
Dirk. It's going to be, you don't even have to write the other two.
That's true. The others just lead to dead ends. And they're like, huh? You picked this choice? Go back.
Go back and punch
yeah,
Dirk.
Yeah, so basically, go back to punch Dirk. There, in an instant like that, the choice would split out to three different scenes. So I would have had to write three different scenes leading off from that choice. Other times, there are non-branching choices, which kind of just affect your response within a scene. So an example of that might be, ask Dirk about his new book that he's writing, or stare at Dirk with a glare, or try to pick a book off his shelf without him noticing. That could lead to the next scene being more or less the same. That's right, Dirk. I've actually stolen all of your books when you weren't looking.
Bastard.
You should be afraid. So that could lead to the next scene being more or less identical to the previous scene, but there'll be some flavor text that is a bit different in that. So it might be like a few sentences scattered throughout that scene, which are different depending on the choice you made before it. So through that structure, you essentially have some kind of linear pathways within the game where people are making choices that affect how it appears for them, but it's still the same overall sort of scene. And then you have some moments where the story does branch out and you might decide, do I visit this character who's in the army's barracks like and duel with them? Do I go to the kind of markets and try to buy something and negotiate the merchants down? And those would like lead in totally separate directions, for example. So does that sort of answer how that works from a mechanic standpoint?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So
is this episode actually just sneaky advertising?
Correct. It is. Siege of Trevlin, available right now. Shameless plug.
No, but it's
so
not
did,
available
did
right
company,
now. Not yet.
Like, did they approach you or did you approach them?
I approached them. So I've known about... So basically this is through a publisher called Choice of Games. And they like just put out these things. So they've put out like probably about 100 of these games before. So they're pretty well established. And I've known about them since like 2016. In early 2020, I basically pitched to them. And I was like, went through their application process, which essentially involved like sending in a CV that just listed out previous things I'd published with like a cover letter saying why I thought I would be good for this project. And then from there, it was like 6 months of sending outlines through, sending blurbs through, sending ideas through before they greenlit the game and we started writing it from that point. So yeah, just reached out to them. Didn't really have any connections, didn't have like an agent for it or anything. And I think the majority of authors who write for them literally go through the same process.
Cool.
And they've been great to work with as well. Like it's, yeah, very good editing. Nice having an editor for each chapter.
What's a pay structure like for something like this? Like I've never done anything like that.
Yeah. So it's very similar to kind of like a traditional novel in the sense that you get an advance upfront as you write the project and the advance is paid out over several installments. So all up the advance, and this is on their website. So this is like not me like breaching any contract things or whatever. The advance for the overall story is like $7,500. And then you get 25% of royalties after the book, not the book, after the game earns back its advance. So once the game, sells enough copies to basically cover the $7,500 that you got, then you start earning royalties from that point, and they pay out every month, apparently.
What do they do? What do they put out for, like, advertising and marketing? And I would imagine that gets deducted as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they actually pay a lot for advertising, because they have a pretty big email list and a fairly established audience.
Fan base, anyway. Okay.
Yeah, because, like, as you can imagine, this is a super niche thing. Yeah. And, you know, like, it's... I think an instance of, like, the people who like this stuff really, really like it, and most people just have never heard of it. So most of the people who have played a couple of their games, like, you know, go on to play all of them. Last I checked, they had an email list of like 60,000 people or something like that.
That's impressive.
And which is really, really impressive. I mean, who knows?
But they still only have an open rate of 35%. Bloody 35%. Yep. You can't get away from it.
No one has open rates of more than 35%. It's funny because, like, in my day job, I run out a lot of our email stuff for that as well. Still 35% open rates, just like everything.
It's weird, everything, isn't it? Is, like, everybody has the exact same open rate. It's almost like the figures are you know, fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like it's meaningless.
It's almost like it's Amazon. So
they have, they have an email list which they put it out on. They have, like, an app in the App Store, which is what you can play the game through, and also that, like, promotes the games within it. And... yeah, in terms of, like, paid marketing, I don't think they do a lot, but they seem to have a big inbuilt audience. Like, probably a year ago, I put up a demo of the game. So the first two chapters, all up, there's nine chapters, on their forum, and, like, 2,500 people, like, clicked through on that link to play the demo of the game.
That's
so
impressive.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that's like, not actually not a massive achievement, because I looked at some of the other demos that have gone up on that forum, and some of them are, like, you know, 4,000 people clicking through to play this demo by an author that I've, you know, never really heard of, but has maybe done a couple of games in the interactive fiction space. So yeah, they seem to have a fairly inbuilt, a big audience. Obviously, I have zero idea how that's going to affect sales, because as of the time we're recording this, it hasn't released yet. But I will say also, some of their games have been nominated for, like, the Nebula Award for game writing before.
Ooh.
And I think one of them has maybe even won it. So that's an award that's usually won by, like, you know, AAA studios. I think, like, Outer Wilds won it a few years ago or whatever.
Is the Nebula the Australian one?
No.
Or was that the Aurora? That's
SFWA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think the Nebula is more or less worldwide.
Yeah, it's it is world open worldwide. It's
Nebula Award.
SFWA.
Recently, there was some
based out of the U.S.
fantasy awards that I couldn't possibly win.
They're the Aurelis Awards.
Oh, that's right.
That Aurelis Awards is Australian.
That was very racist of them.
That's the Quokka Awards.
Maybe you can argue that you have Australian exposure because you know me.
An Australian exposed himself to me once.
Just once?
With his words. Yeah, that's probably good grounds to get your Aurelius Award.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, puppy!
Yeah, oh, the beagle is in frame. Hi, Cora.
Cora
has
entered
appeared.
The building.
Cora is so much bigger than last time I saw her.
Hi, Cora!
She's tiny. She's an absolute runt of a beagle.
It must just be because you're holding her, like, close to the camera. She looks kind of big.
Cutie pie.
Oh, Rob's frozen out while he talks to his... Oh, no,
nope,
he's back.
He's good.
He's back.
So how much work actually went, like, would you say went into producing it? Because, like, obviously you got a $7,500 advance, which is nice, and hopefully you'll get some extra royalties from that. Do you think it's hopefully going to be worth it with the amount of effort and work that you've put into it? Because, I mean, 280,000 words is a lot. It's a big book no matter what, but obviously the way that you've had to structure it... Yeah, the way that you've had to structure it and everything as well... I'm guessing a lot of work's gone into this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I've got my writing... I'll get my words per hour spreadsheet up, which I, like, track everything I write in. And I think it took me, just off the top of my head while I get it up, like 600 days to write the whole thing. So it was quite substantial. Did I have it up here somewhere? Yeah, so...
That's while working a day job kind of thing, right?
Correct. Yeah. So working like 4 day a week day job as well. So
you weren't writing any other books at the same time, right?
For the first maybe Yeah, so I'll give you the timeline of it, because I sort of was. So start of, I sent out the initial outreach email to them in March of 2020, about 100 days later. So in August, they greenlit the game for me to start writing. So in that time, I was also writing and finishing off the Thunder Heist. Mm-hmm. And I was just sort of doing the outlining and the pitching, like, in all the time outside of that. From the time that I got the green light to start writing it, it took about 450 days to finish the first draft of the novel. So that was the roughly 280,000 words to go all the way through. And then it was probably like another 35 days to finish the revisions on that as well. So yeah, like the actual writing time for it was probably like around 500 days. There was like several months of outlining involved at the start, which was less intense. But yeah, to answer your question, Rob, for me in my position, it was definitely worth it at the time to take it, because I have not like made that much money from my other novels. And I also wanted the experience of like working with an actual publisher as well to see. Probably wouldn't be worth it for any of you guys, because you probably can make more than that from a novel which doesn't take 2 years to write. So hopefully it will continue to pay off with royalties to be worthwhile from that point on.
Mm-hmm.
I think I wouldn't like immediately jump into writing another project for them right now, unless it makes over a certain threshold with royalties, just because I am aware that the 280,000 words that I put into this project, which was immensely fun, really enjoyed it, is also equivalent of probably writing for regular books, because the words per hour rate that I had on this project, if I convert that into what that would be writing a regular novel for me, it would be like 400,000 words of regular novel writing, which is like, you know, four whole books. So yeah, it definitely was like very intense, very long, because you have to do the coding for it as well. Super enjoyable. I'm glad I've done it. I think if I went back 2 years and I was in the same situation, I would still probably go through it. I think right now that I feel like I have a bit more of an audience and maybe can like do a bit better with my own self-published novels, I probably wouldn't be jumping into doing this again, unless of course it does very well from a royalty perspective and then justifies that time. But for now,
you've done the writing and you've done the coding.
Mm-hmm.
So the publisher is literally correct. Just providing the platform.
Yeah, and also the editing for it as well. Yeah, and the coding language and that sort of
and
thing.
And the advance.
Well, yeah, and the advance, yeah. So, yeah, yeah.
Are you hoping it will translate into more readers as well? Like, is that a hope for
I
you?
I don't know. It'd be nice. It'd be nice if people read this and then are like, oh, I want to check out Jed's other novels or whatever. I don't imagine there will be a heap of crossover. Like, I've played through a lot of Choice of Games stories before. Love them. Have not, like, felt a massive inclination to then check out those authors' regular books.
Mm.
And I imagine a lot of the people who play Choice of Games text adventure stuff, you know, that's the thing that they like, and they might have like different tastes from actually wanting to read a regular fantasy book. I think the way I kind of see this is as like a sort of, this is like very boring investment speak, but that's my day job, so what can you expect? It's kind of like a diversification away from Amazon, in a sense, because the kind of ecosystem that this game is operating in is like totally a different audience, a different market, a different company from all of Amazon's stuff. But it seems to have very consistent long tail outcomes.
Yeah.
So the author who kind of, I won't say her name because she might not want this information out there, but like there was an author who helped me with my application for this company who had written some of their games before and I really liked them. And she showed me some of her sales figures, and it was very remarkable how consistent they were. Like, you know, sometimes when we publish novels, like it does continue to have that like trickle of sales afterwards, but it usually just drops off a cliff after a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And she had games that had been out for like 3 years with them and was still getting like very, very consistent, good numbers every single month. Nice. Essentially. So it's my hope that this can become the kind of thing that like generates a significant amount of passive income every month. And yeah, like that allows me to have more freedom and security with my other writing, and helps me get towards that point of, you know, like making the author career more of a thing.
That's
and that
awesome.
Sort of stuff.
I think what a lot of people aren't going to realize is how bad
how low advances are these days from traditional publishers. Yeah. So you go like $7,500, you know, for 280,000 words. You're like, that's not a ton. However, Swarm and Steel sold to Skyhorse for, I think, about $2,000. Now, I was desperate at the time and unemployed. But, like, that's, you know, sometimes what you're seeing. And, yep. you know, there are a lot of trad publishers out there, even some of the bigger ones where, like, I remember, what was a Titan? Titan offered something like 8,000 for Beyond Redemption. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's like a decent sized publisher. That's actually not a terrible advance in today's market.
For a single book.
Yeah.
For a single book. And when you're looking at you know, royalties that are likely to pay out, your advance is likely to pay out. And then, you know, making more money past that on, you know, like a fairly steady sales. It's sort of more enticing than it might initially seem.
Yes. Yeah. That's my thoughts on it as well. Like, obviously, it's amazing if you can get paid a massive advance. But in some ways, it's almost cooler to have, like, a smaller advance and larger royalty options, because then you get that consistent income going forward in the future. Like, they offer the option to have a $10,000 advance and 10% royalties, but their default is like the $7,500 and 25% royalties, because they tell their authors, like, you are probably going to make way more money with the 25% royalty option, even though it means you're not getting as much upfront. And to kind of put into perspective what some of the sales could look like from a profit point of view, if the game... This is like all based on some figures I had a while ago, so it may be a little bit off, but I think I figured that, like, it to break even from the royalty perspective, it needs to sell like about 3,000 copies, a little under 3,000 copies or so, which, yeah, sounds like a lot. They have like an email list of 60,000 people, so hopefully some of those go across. And then, yeah, for every 1,000 units sold, that would be like, I think around like $3,000 from there. So yeah, like to your point, Mike, hopefully it does become the kind of thing where the royalties are what make the bulk of it. And having looked at some of the previous novels that have published on there, based on my very sketchy like napkin math stuff, so who knows how accurate this is, but based on some of the figures I've seen from other stories on there, like some authors have been walking away with like $160,000 over the course of several years from based on like looking at, so one author, like I know her sales and I know her reviews, so I kind of figured like a reviews to sales ratio, applied that to one of their other stories which had like 6,000 reviews from people, and I was like, okay, this is roughly how much I would expect this to make.
Nice.
So no idea how accurate that is, but like there are some things on there which seem pretty big from a sales perspective.
Seems like it's got a decent market.
Yeah,
then.
So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Even the fact that like 6,000 people are reviewing a game on their platform is like, good. I think, pretty sick.
I mean, I used to have books of them, like physical books of these choose your own adventure things back when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a really good one where you're investigating this, who had to discover the mystery of Loch Ness.
Oh. Nice. Did you succeed?
I can't remember, you know.
Did you fail?
I would imagine I would. I did, but then, you know, I think I was like 8 years old at the time, so I probably cheated.
I think you'd know if you discovered the secret of not Loch Ness.
That's what I would think as well.
I think you'd remember that.
Behavior.
I think you failed, and you're trying to block that out.
He's trying to block that out
of your memory.
Everything he's done, I was probably eaten by Nessie, to be honest.
That would have been my goal.
To try to get eaten by the Loch Ness monster. you're like, guys, you don't understand. The secret is inside the monster's stomach. I need to get eaten in order to discover the truth. Yeah, so... But yeah, in terms of sales stuff, maybe we can, like, I don't know, do a brief follow-up piece in, like, a year or so, and I can show you how it goes from that point.
A year?
But, if you're not, like, swanning around...
I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow.
By then.
I mean, hopefully that's the dream, right? Like, yeah. Hopefully in a year we're doing Wizards, Warriors, and Words from our mm-hmm. mega yacht in the Caribbean or something.
Yeah. Carrying around golden toilet seats. Not even using them, just carrying them around.
Nah, we'll be doing that it from the mega yacht, but it'll be your mega yacht, and the rest of us will just be hangers-on.
Nice.
We're in the dinghy.
BYO.
That's just there. The ship like, no, no, you can't come aboard.
Sorry, really busy up here at the moment. Just too crowded.
Here's your mackerel.
I don't have room for you, along with just throwing out raw fish into yeah. a dinghy below. Nice.
We're hungry, Jed.
Yeah. So, any other questions, or do we want to wrap this up?
Sure. With the mackerel.
Yeah.
With the mackerel.
Yeah. Send this on a high point.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, yeah, that's a little bit about Siege of Treblin. Hopefully that gives you a bit yeah. of behind the scenes into what it's like.
I hope it kicks ass.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll see. Like, by the time this episode comes out, I'll probably release this like after the game is available, so I'll put a link down below. I also did a much longer interview with Adrian Gibson on the Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast, which I think some of you guys have been on before or are planning to be on. I'm not sure if you guys have
I think I'm supposed to do something with Adrian in the nearest future, but I never write yes. anything down, and I rely on people to remind me, so I have no idea.
All right, well, that's a potentially they're on the podcast as well. But yeah, we talked about it on more detail than that, so I'll link down to that as well. But yeah, thank you for listening/watching, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Goodbye. See ya.
Cool.
Sick.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.